Hello, Juno. This is Juno Afternoon, and I am your host, Joan Pardis. Today on the show, we will have Wayne Jensen from the Alaska Committee talking about the legislative reception Wednesday night. We'll also be talking with City Manager Kim Kiefer with updates about CBJ activities. Jesse Post will be here to talk about Project Homeless Connect, the event coming up later this month, and we'll celebrate Big Brothers Big Sisters National Mentoring Month. So welcome to Juno Afternoon. Today's weather, we have rain. We're going to have rain tonight, lows around 35. Tomorrow will be rain. It looks like rain straight through Wednesday.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The scheduled meeting between Canadian Prime Minister Stephen Harper and the country's Native leaders took place Friday, but there are some who disagreed with the meeting, and many chiefs boycotted it. Dan Karpinchuk reports.
Those divisions were apparent right from the start of the meeting in Ottawa. Some protesters tried to block the door to the building where the meeting was being held. Some Manitoba chiefs who boycotted the talk spread tobacco on the steps to protect their people. Several dozen women linked arms to stop other people from entering. Inside, the Prime Minister would not back down on his omnibus bill, which includes changes to environmental protection for lakes and waterways, many of them on Native land. On the issue of resources, he said that's a provincial issue. He also promised to meet with Sean Atheo, the National Chief of the Assembly of First Nations, in a couple of weeks to continue a comprehensive dialogue on treaty rights. But Atheo put a positive spin on the meeting.
It was an opportunity where the Prime Minister stayed for the entire meeting, which wasn't expected. We stayed together so that the Prime Minister could hear all of the leaders.
Many chiefs said none of their major issues were addressed, and the meeting also showed the sharp divisions among Canada's Native leaders. Many chiefs from Manitoba and Ontario boycotted the talks. They said Atheo should not have gone to the meeting because Native conditions were not met. And that's put tremendous pressure on Atheo's leadership and the AFN itself as an organization. Derek Nepinak is the Grand Chief of the Assembly of Manitoba Chiefs.
The leader of the AFN, as a person, is a beautiful person, and we love him. And I think he needs to hear that right now because it's a very difficult time. But we do have difficulties, and we do have, I think, decisions to make with respect to the organization.
Teresa Spence, the Northern Ontario chief who is in the fourth week of her hunger strike, did not attend and said she's heard nothing to change her mind about her action. And Idle No More protesters continued their actions over the weekend with a promise of more to come, even suggesting the protests could become more militant, targeting Canada's roads, rail lines, ports, and access to the oil-rich Alberta oil sands. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
A new museum honoring the service of U.S. Marshals will also commemorate the forced removal of Native Americans to Oklahoma. KGOU's Kirk Gortney has more.
The Intertribal Council of the Five Civilized Tribes is accepting an offer from the U.S. Marshals Museum to build a Trail of Tears monument at the facility's proposed site in Fort Smith, Arkansas. Muscogee Creek Nation Principal Chief George Tiger is the current president of the tribal group that includes the Creek, Cherokee, Choctaw, Chickasaw, and Seminole Nations. A letter from Tiger thanked the museum for a very generous and thoughtful gesture. Members of the tribes were forced out of their homelands west into present-day Oklahoma during the 19th century. Thousands died on the journey made on foot, horse, wagon, or by steamboat. Many at some point passed through Fort Smith, which sits on the Arkansas-Oklahoma border. The Marshals Museum will provide land for the monument, but the Intertribal Council will pay for its construction. For National Native News, I'm Kurt Gortney.
In California, graffiti created during Native occupation of Alcatraz Island has been restored. According to the Associated Press, the National Park Service recently completed the project. The work included fixing faded words on a water tower, Peace and Welcome Home of the Free Indian Land. The occupation took place in the late 1960s and early 70s after the prison closed. Activists wanted to turn Alcatraz into an Indian center or university devoted to Native American studies. During this month in 2008, U.S. District Judge James Robertson ruled in favor of plaintiffs in the historic Cobell Indian Trust class action lawsuit over the government's mismanagement of individual trust accounts. A settlement in the more than a decade-old case was finalized last year, and the first round of payments were sent out. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. This is a court-ordered legal notice for Native Americans. The Cobell Indian Trust Settlement is approved. If you believe you might be included in the settlement, you need to file a claim by March 1, 2013 to get a payment. Information is available at the website indiantrust.com or by calling 1-800-961-6109. That's indiantrust.com or 1-800-961-6109. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Hello, Juno. This is Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Joan Pardis. You're listening to KTOO. I am in the studio with Wayne Jensen from the Alaska Committee, and we're going to talk a little bit about the legislative reception later this week. Hi, Wayne.
Good afternoon.
How are you?
I'm very good.
Good. So can you tell us a little bit about what's going to happen Wednesday night at Centennial Hall?
Centennial Hall at 5 o'clock, from 5 o'clock to 6:30. The community of Juneau is hosting a reception for the legislature, for the legislators and their staff who are returning to Juneau, or in some cases new legislators and staff who are coming to Juneau for the first time. It's an opportunity for Juneau to show them a warm welcome, show them that we appreciate their service to the state, and it's the first major social event of the session. It's attended by, we expect, about 1,000 people. We have the entire ballroom of Centennial Hall set up, and it's the second day of the session. The reception will immediately precede the governor's State of the State address, so it's very timely. So you can go to the reception, and then you can still hear the State of the State address. So it's an opportunity for Juneau to just show all those people visiting town that we enjoy their visit here, to we welcome them here, and we appreciate their service.
That sounds great. So it's Wednesday night, this Wednesday night, from 5 to 6:30. There'll be some food.
The event is catered by Abby's Kitchen. Juneau is fortunate to have several good caterers in town, and this is the second year that Abby's Kitchen will be catering the event. In the past, we've had the Baranoff and the Hangar, and they've all been very good. They're very, very good job that the catering services have done, and this is the second year that Abby's will do it, and they did an excellent job last year, and we're expecting the same thing this year.
That sounds great, and it's a free event. Everyone
absolutely free.
Everyone is invited.
We encourage people to come, yes.
That sounds great. And can you tell me a little bit about the Alaska Committee, the group that puts this on?
The Alaska Committee, well, we're not the only group that puts it on, first of all. We're assisted by the Chamber of Commerce, the JZVB, and the City of Juneau all participate in this and putting it together. We're sort of the organizers of it. The Alaska Committee was founded in the mid-90s as a way to sort of be proactive and make Juneau a better capital city. And, matter of fact, our mission is to improve state government by making Juneau a better capital city and doing what things we can do to make Juneau more friendly to the capital and more accessible to the people visiting our capital. So
if you're a Juneau resident and you want to go to this event and perhaps you haven't been there before, is it a dressy event? Is it come as what can people expect?
It's a typical Juneau event. So anything from tuxedos to blue jeans and extra tufts is just fine. So
sounds like good people watching everything from tuxedos to
I don't know if I've ever seen a tuxedo there, but I definitely have seen blue jeans and extra tufts. But it's I guess I'd call it, business casual.
That sounds great. Yeah. And so people come. It's at 5 o'clock. It goes till 6:30. A little piano playing.
There's some piano playing. And the main thing is just to, get around and introduce yourself to the people that are visiting Juneau for possibly for the first time. And certainly maybe some of them that are here for the first session. There's a lot of new legislators. This is the 28th legislature. And interestingly enough, this is the 28th annual reception. Now, they're different times because each session, each legislative session is 2 years, but this is the 28th year in a row that Juneau has hosted this reception, and And that just happens to be the 28th legislature as well. So,
sounds like fun. So, Wayne, anything else you'd like to add?
Oh, well, you know, we just really encourage people to come. It's a great opportunity. You know, the Alaska Committee is, you know, has been very active over the years in helping with supporting Gavel to Gavel, which is an important opportunity for people to connect to their capital. We've partnered with Alaska Airlines for the constituent fair, helped expand the Capitol campus by encouraging purchase and development of the Thomas Stewart Building and the Terry Miller Building and some of those opportunities. So it's an active group, and we encourage people to come to this reception and support us and support the legislature.
Sounds great. It sounds like a great opportunity to show the legislators who serve our state what a great community Juneau is. So
absolutely.
Wednesday night, 5 o'clock, Centennial Hall, be there. Okay, thank you, Wayne.
Thank you.
Ma chère mademoiselle, it is with deepest pride and greatest pleasure that we welcome you tonight. And now, we invite you to relax, let us pull up a chair, as the dining room proudly presents your dinner. Be our guest. Be our guest. Put our service to the test. Tie your napkin round your neck, sherry, and we provide the rest. Soup du jour, hot hors d'oeuvre. Why, we only live to serve. Try the gray stuff. It's delicious. Don't believe me? Ask the dishes. They can sing, they can dance. After all, miss, this is France. And a dinner here is never second best. Go on, unfold your menu, take a glance, and then you'll be our guest. We our guest, be our guest. Beef ragu, cheese souffle, pie and pudding on flambé. We'll prepare and serve with flair a culinary cabaret. You're alone and you're scared, but the banquet's all prepared. No one's gloomy or complaining while the flatware's entertaining. We tell jokes, I do tricks with my fellow candlesticks.
Put it all in perfect taste that you can bear. Come on and lift your glass, you've won your own free pass.
If you're stressed, it's fine dining we suggest.
Be our guest, be our guest, be our guest.
Life is so unnerving for a servant who's not serving. He's not whole without a soul to wait upon. Ah, those good old days when we were useful. Suddenly those good old days are gone. 10 years we've been rusting, needing so much more than dusting, needing exercise, a chance to use our skills. Most days we just lay around the castle. Flabby, fat, and lazy, you walked in and oops-a-daisy!
It's a guest, like some cards and I'll be blessed. Once important, thank the Lord, I've had the napkins freshly pressed. With this food, she'll want tea, and my dear, that's fine with me. But while the cups do this, I'll shoo it, I'll be bubbling, I'll be brewing, I'll get warm, I've been hot. Heaven's sake, you'd rather stop, clean it up, we want the company and friends. We've got a lot to do. Is it one love or two? For you, I guess.
Be our guest.
Be our guest.
Be our guest. Be our guest. Be our guest. Come from land or the west. They thank you. We had anybody here. And we're a pet. It's your deal. It's your deal. Let the tea be in. While the candle lights to glory. Let us tell you this is glory. For my cause. One by one. Till you shout.
And up like that.
Then we'll sing you up the stream as you digest.
Hello, Juno. This is Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Joan Partis, and you are listening to KTOO in Juno's capital city. It is raining outside, and it looks like it will be raining for the rest of the week with temperatures ranging from 35 to 40. So you definitely need a rain hat. So here we are in the studio. We have Kim Kiefer, the city manager, via phone to talk about CBJ updates. Hi, Kim.
Hello. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Great. So what is news? What is going on in our city and borough?
Well, I think what I'll start with this week is sort of the shakeup that we had last weekend that caught a lot of people by surprise, and just want to remind people that we have a lot of information about Juneau hazards available on the Juneau.org website, talking about how to prepare for things like earthquakes, what to do, and also reminding people about tsunamis. And our message system that we have in place right now is a message system that goes out through all of Southeast Alaska. And so it doesn't, very rarely would we be in risk of having some sort of tsunami here. Most likely the risk would come if there was a massive mudslide and we got away from that. But with the kind of earthquakes that we're seeing right now, because they're a slip kind of earthquake, it doesn't tend to cause the tsunami action that you get from others. And so that warning has come on the TV stations a couple of times in the last 3 or 4 months, and rightfully so, brought concern to people. But the thing to remember is it's pretty rare here, and that goes out for all of Southeast. So think about our neighbors in Sitka when that goes out. Where they are right on the waterfront, they need to be able to move to higher ground quickly.
So that, Kim, thanks for bringing that up. So we had the earthquake, we had the messages. So what does one do? So where do we turn as far as resources? So you're saying that if a message goes out, it may or may not pertain to Juneau because it's a Southeast system. So what does a Junoite do in that type of situation? What kind of resources do we have available?
So we have a couple. The big thing is to think about it ahead of time and be prepared. And so always people should be prepared with extra water in their house and other kinds of things like that. And there's a emergency management web page on Juneau.org, and you can scroll to or go to the emergency section, and that has a variety of things to do for personal and household preparedness. As far as the actual whether or not that applies to us, we're working on a system that will come off of the Juneau.org website that will say, if there's a tsunami warning, we'll try and get something up there right away to say, okay, this doesn't apply to Juneau. It's more of a outside coast warning than it is internal. And so we're working to get that up on a system that will come up only when there's some sort of an emergency. And we also are working with the radio stations to try and get information out quickly to residents so that you know, is this something that we need to be moving to higher ground?
Right. And are there designated places in an emergency that emergency happens for some reason you don't know the specifics? Do you go to a certain place in town? Would that be? Is there a designated place, or does that change per emergency, per, you know, the specifics of that emergency?
Very good question. It changes depending upon what the emergency is. So if it's a tsunami, tidal wave kind of thing, that would be a very different location than if there was an avalanche that came down over a road. And so each one of them is different, and that's where we want to try and get the information out, where people can link their smartphones to the Juneau.org website, and it would be right on that front page to say, okay, here's what the warning is, here's the resources you can click on to get more information about where to go. If we've had situations recently with the Gastineau fire, and we opened up a shelter at Centennial Hall for those people. So it really is dependent upon what kind of emergency it is, where people need to go. If you're at all concerned, if you're living right on the waterfront and you're at all concerned, then definitely just try and get to some higher ground. But we don't have designated routes at this point to say, here's where the higher ground is to go to for a tsunami. Once again, that's primarily because our risk is lower for that kind of natural disaster. same thing with earthquakes. We don't have a designated place to go, but there's things people can do just to be safe. You know, the earthquake we all felt, or some people felt last week, was a 7.5. That's a significant size earthquake, and if you read up on that now, then you can think about it. Okay, what do I do if I'm out gardening? What am I going to do? What do I do if I am in bed? And then you think also about, what do you do with things around your bed? Do you have shelves around your bed where you could have things that fall on you if there's an earthquake? So you might want to think about redesigning some rooms. They tell you to stay in bed during an earthquake if you have safe areas around it, i.e. no shelves and stuff, because you have less of a chance of having falls. That's a lot of what the injuries are with earthquakes, is you try and get up and go around and things are moving and you're not sure on your feet, so then you have either trips or falls that go with that.
Right. So you're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Joan Pardis. I'm talking to Kim Kiefer, and we're talking about the resources that CBJ has available. So if you want a checklist as far as being prepared for an emergency, a natural disaster, go to juno.org and then go to what section, Kim?
It's a /emergency.
Okay.
And you can also pull it down on the pull-down menus under departments. It's called Emergency Programs. And you click on that one, and then it's got a home page that talks about really the four phases of emergency management, that preparedness, mitigation, response, and recovery. And then on the left-hand side, there's a menu you can click on that talks about personal and household preparedness. And that's the big thing with any kind of emergency, to be thinking about it ahead of time. What do you need to have? How do you need to prepare? Just like when you think about going on a trip, what are you going to pack? It's the same kind of thing for emergencies. What are the risks that we have here in Juneau, and how should we have some household packing done for those risks?
Right. And can I ask you a question as far
sure.
as the rule of thumb for emergency preparedness? You should have food and water for how many days?
Oh, that's a really great question, and I don't have that off the top of my head. I know that I have a whole bunch of bottles of water that we circulate through the pet bowls, so it keeps it fresh, excuse me. And there's a checklist, or actually from our Juno.org website, you can click on the Red Cross, and they have all that information on what kind of kits you should have, what you should have in your car, what you should have at home. It depends on how many people you have in the house, and then you need to think about the four-leggeds and other animals that you have in the house, too, because they need water.
Right. And, you know, in Juno, we really don't think about water much because we have plenty of it.
Mm-hmm.
But we should think about that. I was in California for the Northridge earthquake.
Oh, okay.
So I know my fair share, unfortunately, about earthquakes, but I never hang anything over my bed. So it's just those common sense, just having maybe a different point of view about safety, because, well, we don't think that we are in an earthquake zone. We are.
Yeah, there's a big fault line that goes on the other side of Sitka. And there's a great website that USGS.gov has that I actually put on one of my favorites at home, that tells you right away when there's been an earthquake, and it'll tell you where it is, how deep it is, and what the magnitude is. And it's quite an interesting map to look at, and it gives the whole world, and you can see that there's earthquakes going on all the time. And it also shows you where those fault lines are, where those plates are, and so it just, all the earthquakes fall along that those plate lines.
Right. I just want to add one more thing, and then we're going to change the subject to
yes.
maybe something a little lighter. But I do want to urge Junoites to look at those checklists and also remember that we have resources right here in Juneau. We have our CBJ working for us. We have Red Cross. We have the United Way. So if and when something like this should happen, remember that you have resources. You're not alone. We're fortunate to have the infrastructure here to support such an event if it does happen. Do you want to add anything to that, Kim?
I think that's an excellent point. I was on the phone probably a minute or two after the shaking stopped at my house. So there are those resources there, and we're thinking about everybody in the community right away. And so just the more people can think about it, the better.
Yeah, well, we're happy you're on your phone telling us what. We were happy you were Janie on the spot, because we're counting on you. No pressure, but we are.
Thank you.
So let's talk about some other CBJ activities that might not be as daunting.
Well, so tonight is a kickoff for a project that the Assembly has been working on. They have a task force that's looking at housing. And so tonight at the Committee of the Whole, they will be getting their first report from one of the four groups that they have asked to provide basically what they're saying, a white paper, information on how can, what are the challenges to providing housing in Juneau and all areas of Juneau and all types of housing. And so they've asked developers, they've asked landowners, they've asked lenders, and they've asked realtors to get together as a group and come back with recommendations to the Assembly on what they think some changes could be made that would help in creating more housing in Juneau. So tonight at the Committee of the Whole, there'll be a brief overview by the Community Development Department to say, to step people through what it takes to build a single family home, what it takes to build a small subdivision or a large subdivision, just to, for the Assembly and the people listening in the audience to have an idea of what the process currently is. And then we've got the developers that will be presenting a number of their ideas of things that they think could change, the options that could change that would make housing easier to do in Juneau, easier to develop.
That sounds great. And I would encourage anyone who's listening who has a thought about this subject or any other subject that impacts the city as a whole to write to your Assembly members, write to Kim. They want to know what everyone's thinking so they could represent us as best as possible.
Definitely. And we are asking for anybody, they've tapped those four groups to work together individually, you know, those subgroups, but we definitely want to hear from everybody. If they have ideas, suggestions, based on their own experiences, we'd like to hear that.
Right. And you could just Google CBJ or City and Borough of Juneau, and then there is an email link for you to write to your Assembly members and the mayor and contact Kim as the city manager.
Right, and you can get all that information off the Juneau.org website. There's a link right there for the Assembly, and it's, like you said, it's a one click, and it sends it out to all the Assembly members.
That'll be great. Well, Kim, we're out of time. Thank you so much for your time.
Oh, thank you, and be safe out there. It's wet, and it's also a little slippery, so remember those grippers.
Exactly. All right, thank you, Kim.
All right, take care.
All righty, bye-bye.
This bye-bye.
Is Juneau Afternoon.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 14th of January, 2013. It's the birthday of Albert Schweitzer, born in Kaisersberg in the province of Alsace-Lorraine, 1875. He was a musical prodigy. He was a theologian, an expert on Bach and Goethe and Kant. And when he was 21, Schweitzer made a plan. For the next 9 years, he would devote himself to learning and religion, but once he turned 30, he would spend the rest of his life serving humanity. And so, on his 30th birthday, he went off to medical school. His wife, Helena, trained as a nurse at the same time, so she could help him with his work, and in 1913 they set sail for French Equatorial Africa to set up a hospital in La Baronnais in Gabon. He paid for the hospital himself out of money he'd earned giving concerts. It was a rustic place, even dirty by Western standards. They worked by kerosene lamps, no electricity except in the operating rooms, no phones, no radios. Patients brought their family members to cook and care for them. Albert Schweitzer turned 90 years old in Gabon. He told his co-workers at his hospital, "I belong to you until my dying breath." He died 8 months later in the hospital that he'd built. He was buried near the banks of the Agoue River. The hospital now treats more than 35,000 people a year. It's the birthday of Emily Hahn, born St. Louis, 1905. She was one of the first women to get a degree in engineering from the University of Wisconsin at Madison in 1926, after which she and a friend dressed up as men and drove across the country in a Model T Ford. She was a woman always on the move. One of her catchphrases was, "Nobody said not to go." She became a writer for the New Yorker magazine, a career that lasted almost 70 years. Moved to Shanghai, became a correspondent there, took up smoking opium, had an affair with the head of British Army Intelligence in Hong Kong, had a daughter by him, moved back to New York City. And through all of this, Emily Hahn wrote 54 books and more than 200 articles for The New Yorker. She wrote about diamonds, about the Philippines, about primates. She wrote about her wartime romance in her book China to Me. And when she died at the age of 92, her granddaughter gave her eulogy in which she said, "Chances are your grandmother didn't smoke cigars and let you hold wild role-playing parties in her apartment. Chances are she didn't teach you Swahili obscenities. Chances are that when she took you to the zoo, she didn't start whooping at the top of her lungs as you passed the gibbon cage. Sadly for you, your grandmother was not Emily Hahn." Here's a poem for today by Alfred Lord Tennyson, three verses from his long poem, In Memoriam. "Dark house by which once more I stand, here in the long, unlovely street, doors where my heart was used to beat so quickly, waiting for a hand that can be clasped no more. Behold me, for I cannot sleep, and like a guilty thing I creep at earliest morning to the door. He is not here, but far away the noise of life begins again, and ghastly through the drizzling rain on the bald street breaks the blank day." Three verses from In Memoriam by Alfred Lord Tennyson. That's the Writer's Almanac, supported by Grove Press, publishers of The River Swimmer by Jim Harrison, two novellas that explore inconvenient love, the conflict between urbanity and nature in America's heartland, and the never-ending pursuit of balance in an imperfect world, in bookstores everywhere. And by Reputation.com, helping make professionals and businesses look their best in search results and online review sites. Learn more at Reputation.com. Produced by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Hello, Juno. You are listening to Juno Afternoon on Juno's Capital Public Radio, Juno's public radio station in Alaska's capital, KTOO. So tonight, the Eagle Crest Nordic Advisory Group will be meeting at 6 p.m. at City Hall Conference Room 224. If you'd like to attend, please do so. Or if you want more information, you can call Carlton at 360-305-6629. The Eagle Crest Nordic Advisory Group meeting tonight at 6 p.m. at City Hall. So here in the studio, I have Jesse Post from Project Homeless Connect. There's a new event. There's not a new event. There's an event coming up later this month. But hi, Jesse. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Joan. Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Oh, it's good to have you here. So tell me a little bit about this Project Homeless Connect event.
Well, this event is happening on Monday, January 28th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. at Centennial Hall and the Juno Arts and Humanities or Juno Arts and Culture Center. And Project Homeless Connect is an event that connects those experiencing homelessness with more than 50 service providers in the areas of housing, health care, mental health, and behavioral health services, legal assistance, and education.
That sounds great. So this is a project of the Juno Economic Development Council, the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, and CBJ, right? It's a partnership between the three of them?
That's right. And, the Juno Homeless Coalition, because Alaska Housing Finance awards a Community Homeless Coordinator Program grant to communities throughout the state, and the city has allocated the Juno Economic Development Council to provide these services. And so through this contract, I provide support services to the Juno Homeless Coalition, who's organizing this event. So
that sounds great. Now, this is the fourth event of this kind, right?
Yeah, this is the fourth annual Project Homeless Connect.
Right. And how many people attended last year?
Last year there was over 180 participants that were surveyed at Project Homeless Connect. So that was definitely the largest number that they've seen in the past 3 years. And we're definitely expecting well over 100 participants this event.
That is wonderful. So when you're connecting the people to resources, so I imagine that you might need some volunteers for this event?
Yes, we are definitely will need lots of volunteers and donations to make this event very successful.
So if I wanted to volunteer, let's say, what would I expect? Like, what would a volunteer do?
Well, there's kind of several roles for volunteers. One thing that a volunteer can do is we have greeters, which help make a first impression and welcome participants to the event. We also have intake and check-in volunteers to help with the annual point-in-time count survey, which is a big component of Project Homeless Connect and collecting data on our homeless population.
And if somebody wanted to volunteer, so it sounds like you could go for the whole day or for an hour or two or whatever really
fits
you. Yeah,
it's really, we have, you can volunteer in different time shifts in the morning, afternoon. We have, we need volunteers to help with setup and breakdown of the event. So it's really dependent on your schedule. So.
Okay. And it seems like there is a one hour session for volunteers that's going to be held at Centennial Hall on Wednesday, January 23rd. So that's a week from this Wednesday because everybody's going this Wednesday to the legislative reception at 5 o'clock at the Centennial Hall. But next Wednesday, you could go back to Centennial Hall for an orientation from 6 to 7. And then there's also another one on Friday from noon to 1, Friday the 25th.
Yeah, that's right. And they only need to attend one of those sessions. But it should help volunteers and also service providers that will be at the event. It's kind of an orientation to let them know what to expect and where they can help out at the event.
That sounds great. And then also, if you don't have time, many of us are interested in helping but don't have the luxury of time, there are donations that people could use. And this could be like clothes that no longer fit. What are you looking for?
We're looking, for a variety of things. Obviously, a lot of items that will help participants get through the winter. So warm coats and jackets, warm socks, boots, hats, gloves. But then also things like toiletries, like shampoo and soap, even something like nail clippers and combs and brushes and interview clothes for job interviews. So quite a variety of stuff and also non-perishable food.
Okay, that sounds great. And if somebody has a donation, is there a number or a website that they could visit? I assume they have to call you.
That's right. Well, there's on the Juneau Economic Development website, there's more information and a full donation list and contact information about the event. But, the website is jadc.org/project-homeless-connect, and they could also give me a call or send me an email. So.
Right. And Jesse's number is 523-2335. So you could call Jesse there or email her at jpost@jedc.org. But I went on the website earlier. If you go to JEDC, I'm pretty sure that you could find Project Homeless, this event, pretty easily. So jedc.org, if you go there, you could navigate through that website to find out information. And what they're looking for is either volunteers for the event with two volunteer orientation sessions next Wednesday and next Friday, one in the evening and one during the day. And then the event takes place on Monday.
Yes.
And the goal is to connect homeless people with resources.
Yeah. That's right. And there's also another goal. As I mentioned earlier, Project Homeless Connect coincides with the annual point-in-time homeless count, which is an annual survey conducted by housing agencies and shelters, school districts, hospitals, and other service providers. And this is an important piece of Project Homeless Connect because it gives us better understanding of the demographics and enables us to obtain a more accurate number of our homeless population. So that's also the other goal, is to get accurate data on our homeless population as well as connecting them with these on-site services.
Right. And then So last year, 180 participants attended. So, but there's more homeless than that in Juneau?
That's right. Last year, through that point in time count, and Project Homeless Connect only funnels, you know, the information that we get in Juneau, other agencies in Juneau send in their information from their place. And
it's okay. So there's a lot more homeless than 180 people.
Well, okay, that's right. From the last 2012 point in time count show that there was over 500 homeless in our community here.
Right. So if you're interested in participating in this event, you could call Jesse at 523-2335 or send her an email at jpost@jedc.org. Looking for volunteers and also looking for a variety of different donations to help the people who don't have homes get through the Juneau winter, whether it's snowing or raining buckets like it is today. So if you have the time and the inclination or the ability to drop off a donation, please, a donation of goods. The number is 523-2335. Jesse, do you have anything else you'd like to add?
Yeah, if I can just add onto the donation part, United Way of Southeast Alaska is collecting all of these goods, and they're located at 3225 Hospital Drive, and if you could, it would be great to drop off these donation items before the event, so we don't have to worry about compiling everything.
Right. So the donation drop-off point is at the United Way office, which is, if you're heading toward the hospital, it's right on that corner across from Twin
That's
Lakes,
right.
Going up to the hospital. And they are probably there from 9 to 4 every day?
Yeah, I believe right. So. And then also the Glory Hole is collecting non-perishable food donations.
That's great. So the Glory Hole, United Way, partnering with CBJ, Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, JEDC, all to help the people in Juneau who are homeless to get on their feet. So, Jesse, anything else you'd like to add?
No, I think that's it. Hope to see you out there volunteering at Project Homeless Connect.
Right, and the number is 523-2335. Thanks, Jesse.
Thanks, Joan.
Somebody cry, why, somebody say, Somebody sing.
Hello, hello, hello.
Somebody sing. Somebody cry. Why? Somebody sing.
He don't mind. He don't mind. Yes, I know. He don't mind.
Somebody say,
hello, hello, hello.
Somebody say, somebody cries,
why?
Somebody say. Somebody sing,
hello, hello, hello.
Somebody say, somebody cry, why? Kulumane,
kulumane, kulumane siswe.
Singan benjan,
baya chapula basichanda, yo.
Hello, Juno. This is Juno Afternoon. It is Monday, January 14th, and you are listening to KTOO. I just want to let everyone know there is a traffic slowdown on Eagan. Police are closing one lane on the outbound lane at Norway Point due to an accident. Please drive carefully. It is messy and rainy and very rainy outside. So here in our cozy studio, we have representatives of Big Brothers Big Sisters. It is National Mentoring Month. We have Leslie Scranton, who is the counselor at Auk Bay Elementary. Hi, Leslie.
Hello.
And we have Lita Gilbertson from the Big Brothers Big Sisters office right here in Juneau.
Hi.
Hi. So, Leslie, you want to talk a little bit about the school-based program, Big Brothers Big Sisters school-based program?
Sure. We have the opportunity to enjoy Big Brothers Big Sisters who come to the school during the school day. They're paired up through the Big Brothers Big Sisters program and are specifically, you know, in that type of a program to mentor kids during the school day. Typically they come during lunch and have lunch and a recess time, a game time with the children. They're not really there for academic support necessarily, but they're really there to be a caring and trusted adult in the child's life who they can count on once a week to come see them.
Sounds great. As a counselor, what do you think about the program, the school-based Big Brothers Big Sister program?
Well, I really believe in the power of caring and mentoring adults and how they can impact a child. We see such growth and stability in children who have those caring adults in their life, and whether they're at risk or not for anything. It's wonderful to know that they can count on grown-ups and see great role models around them and have somebody who's kind of their special person that they can share with their friends as well.
That sounds great. So you're a big advocate of the program, it sounds like.
Yes, I am. And Auk Bay has quite a few matches.
Do you know how many?
I would say probably it's close to 10.
Wow, that sounds great.
Mm-hmm.
And so, Lena, I'm going to ask Lena, the Big Brothers Big Sister representative, the next question. Lena, if you wanted to be a school-based Big Brother or Big Sister, mm-hmm. is it a big commitment? Like what kind of time are we talking about per week?
So for our school bus program, it's actually not that big of a commitment. Like Leslie mentioned, a lot of bigs will come in on their lunch hour. So it's really just 1 hour a week, once a week.
In the school.
That's it. In the school.
In the school-based
yep.
program. And are there a lot of big brothers, little brothers, little sisters in need of a school-based match at the moment?
Yes. So I'm not sure of the exact numbers. As far as school-based versus our community-based little brothers and little sisters, but we do have around 40 littles that are waiting to be matched in either one of those programs right now. So we definitely are looking for big brothers and big sisters.
That's great. And were you a big brother or a big sister?
I am a big sister right now in the school-based program,
mm-hmm.
actually. So.
And what do you think about it as far as, you know, everybody talks about cost-benefit as far as time. Everybody's stretched thin for time, so... Some people do a cost-benefit analysis. So your cost-benefit analysis of spending time with a child in that, you know, structured environment of school, just 1 hour, go out and for your lunch break and sit and hang out with a little kid,
mm-hmm.
is how does it feel for you?
Well, for me, I have not been matched with my little sister for very long. She's in kindergarten. We've been matched for just a few months. As far as the time out of my schedule, it's nothing. Every Friday at lunch, I go to the school and I spend time with her. And I look forward to it. Since we've been matched, you know, she's definitely opened up to me. We are just getting to know each other a little bit better. We might eventually transition into the community program so we can go out and do different activities. But for now, the school-based program is perfect. And at this point, we're just getting to know each other. So it's kind of hard to say.
So what is the difference between the school-based and the community-based program?
In the community-based program, we match up adults with youth, again, that can be aged up to about 15. So our matches get together maybe 2 to 4 times a month doing any sort of activities that they're interested in doing around the community, whether it's going on a walk or going to a movie. So there's a lot more flexibility as far as the activities they can do since it is opened up to the entire community.
Right. So. And Big Brothers Big Sisters actually hosts a bunch of pretty cool events, don't they? Like zip lining or something along those lines?
Yes, we do. Yeah. So once a month we organize an activity for all of our matches. School-based matches can go as well. The only difference is Big Brothers and Big Sisters cannot drive their littles to these activities, but they are allowed to go. We do, like you mentioned, zip lining. This month we're doing a big breakfast where all the littles will cook for their bigs. In honor of National Mentoring Month. Next month, we're doing a big day up at Eagle Crest. We do pumpkin carving. We have all sorts of deals around town as well. So we really try to make it as easy as possible for our bigs.
That sounds great. Yeah. So back to Leslie Scranton, the Auk Bay counselor, who is an advocate of the Big Brother Big Sister program. So, Leslie, you probably as a counselor have lots and lots of data about how important it is to have mentors in youth in the lives of youth.
One of the greatest indicators that children resiliency studies with children, one of the greatest indicators that children have a real strength in resiliency is having had a real caring adult in their life. Oftentimes that is very much a parent, and oftentimes it's a person outside their family. And I think that's where Big Brothers and Big Sisters can come in and help build those good strategies, good choice-making skills, good coping strategies. And we match up kids from two-parent families just as much as from single-parent families. There's not really a huge, stigma in having a big brother, a big sister, and there's no guideline that says it just has to be from a single-parent family. We often match from two-parent families as well.
Right. So. That's great. Mm-hmm. And so, Lena and Leslie, either one of you can answer this. So, even though it sounds, from what Leslie is saying, that it's kind of a big responsibility, I think when I was a big sister and I was in the school-based and I was also the community-based, and then she moved to Ketchikan and now she's a young woman, and I run into her on the street and we're just like, yeah. But anyway, I found it to be really fun.
Yeah, it can be very rewarding. I see matches, adult matches, who even after a child has moved on to middle school, rematch with a new child at the school and come back over time. And yeah, it's I think it's very rewarding for the adult as well as the child.
Okay, Lena, if somebody's interested in becoming a Big Brother to one of those 40 youth that still need Big Brothers Big Sisters, what's the contact number where they could reach you?
You can call us at 586-3350, and we can start the process.
That's great. And do you have a website where they could just kind of maybe check it out before calling?
Yeah, we do have a website. It's bbbsak.org.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then, Leslie, is there any advice you want to give to, since we have a subject matter expert here in the studio, is there any advice you want to give to adults about thinking about being a Big Brother, Big Sister, or suggestions?
I think the school-based program is a great opportunity to just get exposure to maybe a bigger commitment of being a community-based mentor, because the time commitment for being a school-based mentor is very minimal, really, just lunch hour. And there's so many businesses that support that. So I think anyone who's even thinking just a little bit about it, that's a great place to start. And it's a pretty small commitment, between now and the end of the school year. We only have a few months left, and see if you really enjoy that and if it's right for you.
Right. And the school-based program is roughly an hour a week. That mm-hmm. you go in once a week. Mm-hmm. You come up with a mm-hmm. time that works for everybody, mm-hmm. the teacher mm-hmm. and the school mm-hmm. and the parents and yeah. so on and so forth. Yeah. And you go in for 1 hour.
There is an application process so that we do screen all of the adults who apply for that. It's very... we're careful to do all the background checking necessarily and to make the appropriate matches. It's not just, you know, grab a kid and hook up. It's much more detailed, but mm-hmm. At the same time, it's, you know, it's a good opportunity to just kind of see what it's like.
Right. So if you're even remotely thinking about giving back in the form of being a volunteer for Big Brothers Big Sister, there is a process to become one. You have mm-hmm. support of this organization mm-hmm. that has been around for a long time. Mm-hmm. Looks like you have the support of the counselors on site at
yes.
the elementary schools.
All
if you
them.
Should need that. So it sounds like a great opportunity. And that number again is?
586-3350.
Yeah, and grab those Eagle Crest tickets and go up with a kid and have some fun.
Yeah.
Thanks, ladies, for being here.
Thank you.
All righty.
Support for KTOO is provided by Davies Berry Insurance, serving southeastern Alaska since 1917 with personal and commercial insurance, including property, liability, workers' compensation, bonds, marine, auto, homeowners, life, and health policies. 789-5900.
This is Bird Note. Black pole warblers breeding in western Alaska make the longest migration of any North American songbird, an annual round trip of 11 to 12,000 miles. In August, the warblers head east on an ancient migratory pathway across the boreal forests of Canada to the maritime provinces and the coast of New England. In his book Living on the Wind, author Scott Wiedensahl describes what happens next. It appears that many black poles strike out south over the ocean, departing at dusk, picking a night with a brisk northerly tailwind. They will need the help. For the next 40 or 50 hours, the tiny songbirds will fly over the western Atlantic, wings buzzing at 20 flaps a second, climbing to altitudes of more than 5,000 feet. They'll show up on weather radar as they pass Bermuda and the Greater Antilles, glowing green specks like ghosts beneath the moon. The warblers follow a curving track, steered and abetted by the wind. At first, the northwesterlies carry them out to sea. Midway, somewhere around Bermuda, the migrants come under the influence of the trade winds. The tiny birds are shepherded back, toward South America, finally making landfall along the coast of Venezuela or Guyana, an overwater trip of about 2,000 miles. A passage with no rest, no refueling, no water, during which each will have flapped its wings nearly 3 million times. Find us at birdnote.org.
You are listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO. I am Joan Partis. The weather for today is rain until maybe Friday or Saturday when it might turn to snow. Be careful if you're going outbound on Egan. There is a big accident by the Yacht Club. And please tune in tomorrow afternoon for Juno Afternoon. Pat Moore will be your host. He'll be talking with Bob Bankart from the Alaska State Museum, Jocelyn Clark from Juno World Affairs, Renewable Energy. He'll be talking with Chris Rose about renewable energy and with Tom Millerin about the Juno School District's AVID program. Thanks for listening.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Off Bay area, tune to K276AF 103.1. In Lummen and Schweitzer Creek, K269AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201AM 88.1. K220BT serves Hoonah at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, hear KTOO on K210AS 89.9. In Juneau, you can also receive KTLO on GCI Cable Juneau on digital channel 871. We're also online at www.ktoo.org.
Negotiation with a gun at the head of the American people.
President Obama draws a hard line before the next fiscal debate over raising the nation's debt limit.